You are good enough. Somebody has loved you regardless of what you look like, what you weigh, what you've got in the bank, what education you've got, what job you do. They just think you're the best thing since sliced bread. That's unconditional love. And that's actually the cure for low self-esteem.
Welcome to the Level Up with Katie B podcast, where performance meets spirituality and you get all the tools you need to unlock your next level of badassery in life and business. I'm Katie B, airline pilot, human design coach, side hustle extraordinaire and crazy cat lady, and I know what it's like to have a vision for your life that is so big that it feels bananas. I know what it's like to be busy and still want to live an abundant and fulfilling life. And I know that you have everything you need to achieve all of that without burning out. I know you're going to bring your dreams to reality. How do I know? Because if I can do it, so can you. Each week, I and a series of guests will share human design insights, manifestation secrets, energetics and mindset tools that you can use to start stepping into your power as the conscious creator of your most aligned life. Buckle in, baby, because it's going to be a sweet, sweet ride. Welcome back to the Level Up with Katie B podcast. So stoked to be here with you today, and particularly stoked because I've got the most incredible guest joining me today. I am yarning with Louise Towler, who, after many years of writing comedy, also being a professional coach and running several children's theatres, Louise has found her passion helping people find balance with themselves and their loved ones and restore healthy self-esteem. Louise's latest book, Balance, Restore Balance When Love Becomes Control, is for parents. And if you're a parent with a child that has demanding or controlling behaviors that are driving you around the bend, Louise's message is clear. Quit beating yourself up and asking, where did I go wrong? And in her book, Louise will help you identify and overcome these controlling patterns that are actually rooted in low self-esteem. She helps parents gain clarity and gives them the tools necessary to restore a healthy, loving relationship with your child. Can you imagine? You guys know I'm not a mum, but I have been a teenager and I have had a volatile relationship with my parents. And I can, now that I've spoken to Louise, I can 100% see how life-changing her work is for families. If you are not a parent, do not sweat it. Louise has some incredible insights into patterns of behavior that have been holding you and I back. You know, this is not just for parents. This is not just for children. This affects everyone. Low self-esteem impacts everyone. And to be honest, I had no idea. She's a storyteller at heart, and as you listen to this episode, I know that you're going to have more than a few aha moments when you realize either you or someone very close to you is expressing behaviors that at their core are driven by low self-esteem. She's got knowledge for days, but even better, she's got tools that you can use to help overcome this. So just be prepared to see yourself, your loved ones, and maybe your children and their behaviors in a whole new light. It is such an incredible episode and everybody needs to hear it. Before we jump in, a wee announcement I am super pumped about. Doors are open again to Align and Thrive, my 5-month human design deep dive. This is your sweet and transformational portal to confidently leveling up, expanding, and sharing your gifts through my signature Thriving in Business Human Design Synergy Method. This transformative approach serves as a portal for you to thrive while you grow your soul-led business in alignment with your unique energetic gifts. I want you to be able to do it with ease. I want you to be able to do it without burning out. I want you to do it while you have fun. So if you are interested in learning to embody your gifts through human design and also unlock your personal karmic toolkit so that you can thrive as you build your aligned business, click the link in the show notes to find out more information. I currently have 2 spots available, so have a look, see what you think, and if you feel that it's a good way for you to step into your next level in life and business, I would absolutely love to support you on that journey. All right, my love, let's jump into this amazing episode. Welcome, Louise, to the Level Up with KDB podcast. So happy to have you here.
I'm so excited to be here.
Well, I am, like, honestly, the topic that we have chosen to talk about is just so relevant to not only our listeners, but I think it's going to have a huge impact on their entire families. So I really am just so excited to hear all your beautiful insights about low self-esteem. And it kind of comes at a time where you're about to launch, or you have launched a book that goes into the ins and outs of low self-esteem.
Yeah, the particular book I've just written is actually for parents. This one's actually when you've got a child that's struggling with low self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
So that will be exciting.
So what gave you the sort of inspiration and drive to write the book and support your community in this way?
Look, I think it's been a 15-year journey, of my own low self-esteem. And, you know, I think, you know, that I toured myself about 15 years ago as a comic in America for 2 years, and realized that no matter how many standing ovations I got, and everyone would tell you I was great, I still came off feeling low, with low self. You know, I just didn't feel valuable or good enough to be up there. And I was having panic attacks and anxiety. I didn't realize it was all part and parcel of low self-esteem, what I was going through. And it wasn't until I started teaching theatre skills to children when I came back to Perth that I started to realize that it wasn't just me. It was happening to so many people and so many kids and so many parents. I was watching them struggle with the same things that I was struggling with, and so I think that gave me the passion. And talking to so many mums that were just, you know, what can I do to help my child? I don't know how to help my child. I know that this is weird thing called self-esteem that's low, but I don't really understand it.
So do you think you struggled with low self-esteem from when you were a child, or was it that being in the arts kind of brought that out in you?
I think yes to both of those.
Okay.
I think the stats say that 85% of people suffer with low self-esteem. So this is not this is so many people struggle with it. I think I struggle with it as a child. And I think when you go into the arts, especially when you are up on stage, it's going to come flying in your face. You know, suddenly you're up on stage and everyone's looking at you. And yeah, how's your self-esteem doing? I'm not doing too well, because my husband was putting me on with a cattle prod before the show.
It's so interesting, hey, because, you know, I talk a lot about manifestation and personal development and all that sort of stuff. And I think there is a kind of preconceived notion, or I think what I've coined pop culture manifestation theory kind of would have you believe that if something is a passion or it's aligned for you, then you should just feel like easy breezy. It's so easy to just get up and do it, right? Like, it's so easy to get on stage because I know I'm an artist. I know I want to act. But so why do I feel this sheer terror or anxiety or overwhelm when I get up and do it? So yeah, it's so interesting. So you obviously had the drive to just keep going despite the low self-esteem.
I think it was the fact that I was a breadwinner at the time, so my family were living off my earnings and I was on tour. I think if they hadn't have been, I'd have literally come home. But, you know, we were on tour and my husband had given up his job to support me and drive the bus. You know, I think that I started to realise that. I think the biggest thing for me was, you know, no matter how good people would tell me I was, or, you know, that they enjoyed it, I still came off feeling, you know, that I wasn't good enough. And I think that was the biggest. And I would have behaviors that were showing me, which is one of the big things that I teach about self-esteem, that self-esteem is actually a behavior. And you can start to see those behaviors manifest. And they're very, very common. And they're very typical of the self-esteem behaviors that come up. Like I was having anxiety. I was definitely, I was having panic attacks. These are, for me, this, you know, the symptoms. And even it's, you know, if you Google low self-esteem, it will come up with some of the symptoms like anxiety, depression, and all these things are to do with the fact that you just don't feel good enough. Mm. And, you know, you're continuously rehearsing that in your head.
Yeah. So is this the loud inner critic? Is that low self-esteem, that constant sort of like beratement that we often give ourselves? Is that normal, or is that, do I have low self-esteem as well?
I think that's normal. I think, you know, we're all a product of our input of our software, and our software's put in as we're growing up. So no matter where, you know, I always say to the kids when I was teaching, you've had one of the biggest inputs for kids is comparison. And when I'm, you know, working with some low self-esteem, but they'll say, oh, you know, I wasn't good enough. They told me this and they told me that. And so we've believed all these horrible things about ourselves. One of the things I used to get kids to write down was, why don't you write down all the wonderful things about you? And you'd be amazed how many times I'd sit there with a blank piece of paper for at least 5 minutes. They couldn't think of one great thing to write about themselves. But when I said, hey, you know what, why don't you write all the terrible things? Let's get it all out on the table. They wouldn't stop writing. There'd be 22 things. And there'd be things like, you know, I'm stupid. I'm fat, I'm this, I'm that, all these horrible things that they believed about themselves. And so really it's just a whole concoction of really negative experiences that they've believed. And we're all born with self-esteem. We're all born with this full tank of petrol of self-esteem. And along the way, one of the biggest things I will say is comparison. I'm not as good as. And the problem with school is that school is a comparison. The whole model is based on comparison. Where are you in the class? How are they doing? What's their maths like compared to everybody else? What's their running like compared to everybody else? And the reason why I see so many creative kids in this area is because a lot of them at school just, they didn't have the skill set that the school set up for, you know, which people say is the typical, neurodiverse, which is the creative person, is really struggling because they just haven't got that kind of logic thinking. They've got this really creative mind like mine, and you know, a lot of the tasks that are put forward, they, when they're compared to others, they're always going to be low. But give me something I can do. Give me a stage show to write, or a song to write, or a poem to write, and I'm top of the class. But a lot of the times that's not important at school. And so when I was dealing with the kids, I kept seeing this over and over again, and I kept saying to them, a lot of kids have on their list, I'm stupid. And I would say to the kids, why are you stupid? Well, my maths is no good and my English is no good. And so what are you good at? I don't know.
So when you work with these kids, like, what is the turning point? Like, what helps them shift from all that comparison? And I'm assuming that they have that kind of same sort of anxiety and panic attacks. And surely kids that age aren't having depression from this, are they?
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, fuck.
Definitely.
That is insane. Well,
when, when I had the children's theatre, there was a couple of little hacks that I did with kids. And it's very difficult because a lot of the time I work with the parent, which is kind of my favourite thing to do, is to work with the parent. The child's got enough support a lot of the times. You know, there's lots of support options for children. But and also it's like psychology, and I don't get into the psychology side of it.
Yeah.
And I'd always encourage them to find a really good counselor, or, you know, someone to the child to talk to. But when I deal with the parent, I can make the most change.
Mm.
I can deal with the parent, then the, and not deal with them, but help them to understand what's going on for the child. That's the best thing. I see the best output. So I don't normally coach children. It's not really my area.
Right.
But I usually coach it. And lots of times there's not a lot of help for the parent. Mm. They're taking their child here and there to get help, but there's not really help for them. What can I do? And that's where I come, okay, these are all the things you can do to actually help this child change. So going back to the hacks of the theatre, one of the things, just to give you an example, I had a child. She had perfectionism. She was struggling with low self-esteem. She'd come from Asia, I think from China, about 12 years ago. Parents were, you know, scared about the fact that she was cutting herself and she was really down. And I'd done the thing where, you know, write down everything great about you. The sheet was blank. Write down everything that's terrible about you. She was at 22 when I stopped her. And I said, you know, she said, I'm scared to get a part because I might get it wrong. And so what I needed to do was change that belief. because that was what was keeping herself, you know, getting something wrong for her. And this is not a blame of the parent, but this is the culture. If you get something wrong, then it's the worst thing in the world. And so all I said to us, you know, when I did comedy, when I started getting things wrong, the audience thought it was more funnier. They thought it was fantastic. And they laughed so much at that, that actually it was better for me when I got, you know, if I said, oh, I forgot where I am, help me out, you know, they would all laugh. And so it actually worked for me. And so what I did was I put her in a comedy role in the show. And at the end of the week, the father came and thanked me and gave me some chocolates and the car said, she's changed so much. And she said, what did you do? Did you coach it? I didn't do anything. All I did was I helped her to see that being wrong can be good.
Yeah.
So she wanted to have the comedy part then and get everything wrong because she realized she could do something well. It's just a little hack.
Yeah, so cool. And what an incredible transformation in such a short space of time. Do you keep in touch with these kids just out of interest?
I had hundreds of letters. I'm only just talking. I had so many of kids just thanking me. It was a lovely time and it was a great time for me because both my kids worked with me as well because they were kind of late teens, early 20s. And my son did the lighting. My daughter was a director. And we wrote, shows for kids. And really, I didn't care about the show. It was about teaching kids they could do it.
Yeah, so cool. So from a parent's perspective, so the kids are feeling anxious, possibly having panic attacks and depression. How does a parent identify that? Because I remember when I was a kid and I was pretty freaking good at keeping things from my parents. I don't think that they would have known if I was going through a hard time. You know, I didn't want them to know. So how does a parent pick up on these things?
Well, I think there's a behavior. So I speak about these two behaviors and I call them pharaohs and servants. And so I've kind of gone through what, you know, the whole hallmark of the pharaoh behavior. And I call it behavior because it's not the child, it's their behavior. Mm-hmm. It's a protection mechanism they're using to hide the fact that they feel shameful. They don't feel good enough. For whatever reason, there's no blame on the parent or the school. They've just picked it up along the way. In our culture, that's, you know, what happens. And so I say to the parent, no, are they starting to control everything? Are they controlling you? Are they being quite nasty to you? Are they putting you down? And they're making you feel bad. So, you know, we'll have all these behavior. I've got a tick list, you know, that the parent will go, oh, yeah, I've got pharaoh behavior. A lot of the time will say to me, oh, that's my partner as well. He's like that. Or that's my mom, you know. And I said, well, that's self-esteem, that's low self-esteem behavior. So not only you've got the anxiety as well, you've also got this, what I call triggered behavior. So what happens is they'll be fine. And the way I explain it when I'm talking to people is, you know, I talk about this stage, you know, that the stage is your partner or your loved one or your child's on stage and then they're normal. And then suddenly, bang, something triggers them. And then all of a sudden they leave stage and their bad self-esteem behaviors on stage. And what does that look like? And so I say, does it look like a pharaoh? Does it look like suddenly they're being nasty and they're shouting and they don't really care about you and they're not saying, they wouldn't say sorry, you know, and all these behaviors, because that is the protection mechanism of the self-esteem. Don't push me. I'm already feeling I've been triggered and they just lose it. Mm-hmm. So this is this behavior. And it's almost like I said, the parent, you have to sit and watch them from the stalls. You've got to keep off that stage.
Mm.
So that's kind of the behavior that I try and talk to parents about. And when I start, we start to see in people at work and people we know, oh, yeah, that's fine. But then they swing. Then they swing to the servant. And so then you see the servant behavior, that's the creeping back. It's the, you know, it's the all the things that, you know, and we see this a lot in, you know, this was my dominant self-esteem behavior was servant. So what can I help you? What can I fix for you? What can I get for you? It was just all about everybody else and not about me. I couldn't set boundaries. I couldn't say the word no.
Mm.
I couldn't say the word no. That was just rude. So there's these two behaviors. It's like a seesaw.
Okay.
And then people swing.
Yeah. Okay. So I was thinking that it would be one or the other, but it's, yeah. So any one person will go from one to the other and probably there's like varying shades of it along the way as well, right?
Yeah. So you can have a super pharaoh. I call them Tutankhamuns. And then, you know, you've got a super servant, you know, the sacrificial lamb of everything. Everybody must, I must give myself to everybody. So you've got these very dominant, and then, like you say, but people, most people swing. You might know that somebody's quite a fair at work. And when they go home, they've got the pinny on, they're washing up, you know, they're the servant to their wife. Mm. And, you know, so this is how low, to me, that's how the low self-esteem. And that's why I love coming from the arts, because to me, there were two characters.
Mm.
But the main thing I want to get across here is this is not who they are.
Mm.
It's not a blame game. This is a behavior that they use, that we all use, that I have used many times when we are dealing with the fact that we don't feel enough. We'll either try and earn it or try and demand the respect for it.
Mm. Yeah, well, as you're speaking, I'm realizing that I definitely have some of those behaviors, you know. So, and actually, to be fair, you know, the reason I became a coach was because I had pretty bad performance anxiety with around my day job. And yeah, I mean, it started, I don't think I've ever been overly confident. And I always say to the people at work, like, I'll never be a Top Gun. Like, I'm not one of those pilots that just thinks that I'm shit hot and all that sort of stuff. But I had a really triggering experience with an examiner where he literally screamed at me and called me stupid. And it's funny because to me, I just like brushed it off and moved on with my life. But it wasn't until 3 years later when I was talking to a psychologist about why I was suffering from quite bad performance anxiety at work. She was like, do you think that might have had something to do with it? And as you're talking, I'm like, well, that's an obvious point in time where I've had an experience that has like just undercut my self-esteem in a pretty severe way. So super interesting. And I think I would definitely be a servant. That would be kind of my go-to. I would say a recovering servant.
Nice. Me too. I think I'm in that basket too, recovering servant, because I can slip into it. But now I catch myself and go, well, why am I doing that? Why am I needing that person to think that I'm okay? Yeah. What do I need to prove? So it's definitely, and I love that. I love that story. Thank you for sharing that, because I think so many people have been in a situation, similar situation, where, especially as a female in that male dominated environment that you're in, where, you know, you're there giving it your all. And I kind of relate to, you know, to, I've heard people say they're surgeons the same, a female surgeon. You know, and the male surgeon, it's that male, it's that pharaoh and behavior that he was using to undermine you and to come across you. Mm. And I think one of the biggest things that I get from that is how wonderful you were to be able to cope, and the fact that you've gone and talked about it, because that's really good. And the other thing I'd say to you is that was not about you. That was not about you. And this is one of the things I teach is, you know, when people are showing that behavior, the biggest thing to realize is it's all about them, about their low self-esteem. And they use that behavior to try and put shame. And it works. It works, you know, because suddenly you're like, and then like the thing as well, that you then rehearse that in your head. So I remember having a massive panic attack when I was in Texas, and I had a crowd of 2,000 people on stage, you know, I was on stage, and I had a massive panic attack on stage, and 2,000 people looking at you. It's huge. And I managed to actually still continue the show whilst in my head knowing that I was panicking and dealing with all the symptoms, the chest, can't breathe, all the, I'm still carrying on the show. And eventually it's like a waxen wane, it comes down and I was fine. But I was so proud of myself.
Mm.
I was able to, in the into the end, to nobody would have known. But it's, you know, it was still, I hadn't then started to realize what it was.
Okay, so you didn't. Hadn't really identified it as low self-esteem at that point, but you already had some really good coping mechanisms, which I can relate to as well, because I have a lot of really great tools that I lean on when that performance anxiety kind of rears its ugly head at times. What coping mechanisms do you have for times like that?
Depending on, so there's lots of tools that I use with pharaohs, I suppose, with pharaoh behavior. One thing I realized that, particularly with the situation that you mentioned, right? Were you actually the student at the time?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you've got a pharaoh there that's in his domain, and you can't take a pharaoh down when it's their domain. So I would teach people, you know, if they've got a pharaoh in their life and they're not, you shouldn't take them on. That, you know, because when they're being pharaohs, you will lose when they're on stage in pharaoh mode. You can only deal with them when they've come back to themselves or whatever. There's lots of tools, but I think that, you know, especially when you're dealing with pharaohs, one of the biggest things with pharaohs is to realize it's not them. It's not who they are, and to keep you out of it.
Yeah. And so is this what you, I guess this is what you tell your the parents of the students that you're working with, right? To help them understand the behavior of their children when they're behaving, this pharaoh behavior is coming out, hey?
So let's perhaps put it into two categories. We've got when you're dealing with a pharaoh and perhaps dealing with your own self-esteem. So perhaps when you're dealing with a pharaoh, say you've got a child that's a pharaoh or a partner that's a pharaoh, one of the biggest things that you need to realize is that when they've been triggered, there's nothing you can do about it. With you going, don't speak to me like this, or don't you do this, that's just going to, you're going to go into their playing field and you're going to lose. You're going to lose. I'm telling you now. So once they have gone into that mode, once they're triggered, you're not triggered. So you've actually got the choice. You can go, you know what? I know what this is. Whoever I love, my partner, my child has left the stage. I've now got, and I usually get them to give them a name. They come up with some funny names, like, you know, or resting bitch faces here, or, you know, or we've had funny ones like Mary Poppins is on stage, you know, because she was perfectly in every, she was perfect in every way. And every time she came around to the daughter's house, she would make her feel like she wasn't perfect because nothing was done right. So we called her Mary Poppins, and I'd get them to actually make a character in the head. And so your mum's gone. Mary Poppins is on stage. What's happening? Oh, she's telling me the washing's not done and the ironing's not done. I said, because that's her stuff. Don't fight with her. That's she's in her mode. And so I teach them about keeping out of their stuff. Mm-hmm. Keep off stage, as I call it. Keep off stage. Let them have the stage. They've taken over. And eventually they'll come back down. They'll stop being triggered. They'll leave stage. And your loved one comes back on again. And they might not feel remorse. They might not say sorry, because the dominant behavior of servant is never an apology. And that's the dominant behavior of a servant. They apologize continuously.
Yeah.
It's not the dominant behavior of the, and even if they do, it's a begrudgingly round the block one. So, and I suppose that's just a few things. I call it the BAM, you know, keep yourself out of it. Don't give them ammunition. And, you know, move away, all these things that I've got, these tools. So if you're dealing with a pharaoh, and it definitely makes a huge impact. If you're dealing with your own self-esteem, I suppose the first thing I'd ask myself is, you know, what is my dominant behavior? Where do I, which am I doing pharaoh or am I in servant? Okay. So then I would say, okay, so I'm in servant. Okay. I would then watch for when I trigger. I would start putting down my triggers in my phone and going, okay, what triggered? Like the other day, I was tapping out a text somebody, and it was like, how are you? Are you all right? And why am I, what is this? What's triggered this? You know, and so I start to look at what's triggered that. And then I catch myself going into servant mode, and I start to look at what the triggers are. So that was, and the other thing that I teach is this whole thing that we're talking about, you know, especially with ourselves, the, you know, the cure, if you like, for the word, the cure for low self-esteem is the opposite, which is unconditional love. So we got to there, we got to low self-esteem by having conditions on our love because we were measured. So people measured us against everybody else and we had conditions on whether we were enough. And so if we take that ruler down and go, okay, I always get people to think about somebody in their life, and we've always had somebody, whether it's an animal or whether it's a person. Maybe close your eyes for a minute. Close your eyes for a minute and think, who is that person in your life that showed you unconditional love? Was it a grandparent? Was it a parent? Was it a dog? Was it a cat? Feel that feeling. Step into that feeling. And remember what it's like to have somebody love you with no conditions whatsoever. That is perfect self-esteem. You are good enough. Somebody has loved you regardless of what you look like, what you weigh, what you've got in the bank, what education you've got, what job you do. They just think you're the best thing since sliced bread. That's unconditional love. And that's actually the cure for low self-esteem. But we have to get there. It's a long journey. You can't just get up and say a few affirmations and go, oh, I love myself today. And you look in the mirror and go, holy crap, you know, look at me. I weigh this or I'm this or look at my wrinkles or I'm not successful in my job. I haven't got all this money in the bank. So we put all these conditions on whether we're good enough. Does that make sense?
Oh, it makes so much sense. You know, the Mel Robbins high five habit is one of, like, when you read that book, you kind of understand what you're talking about the incremental development of self-love. Because if you've ever tried to high five yourself while you're looking at yourself in the mirror, you'll know the first few times it's fucking jarring, you know, like, because you, like, not many of us look at ourselves in the mirror with love in our heart, right? Like, most of us, it, you know, without practice. And yeah, it seems so simple.
Well, we practice low self-esteem. You know, we practice it every day. We practice the feeling of low self-esteem, and we say the things, like you said, I call it Cinderella thinking. I'm not good enough. I'm not this. I'm not. But what about if you did the opposite? What about every day you said to yourself, I am enough. I'm enough. I can do this. I've got this. And all these things, you know. But it's not even that. It's not even that. It's actually deeper than that. So you can say affirmations. They come out your wazoo, right? What you need to do is get in contact with that feeling. So when you say that thing, you know, I always say, you know, you've got to get in contact with that feeling, the feeling of being good enough. We all have memories. If you think back, you will have a memory of when you were good enough. Everybody does, because we're born good enough. So, you know, you've got that memory, and it's like, that's the feeling that you've got to have every day.
Yeah.
But what I do every day is, for me, it's my granddad. My granddad made me feel that, didn't matter what I did, I was perfect to him. What I weighed, what I looked like, what I said, I was perfect. So for me, it's touching something that reminds me of him every day and just holding it. Say if it was this glass, just holding it in my hand just for a minute and actually stepping into that feeling. And practice that. Practice self-love. Because somebody along the way, I always believe God or universe has shown you unconditional love. And that is the cure, if sense of the word, for feeling not good enough, because somebody's shown you that you were good enough no matter who you were, what you were, what you did.
Mm. Oh, I love that practice. I'm going to do that tonight. I'm going to think of the last time, or just invoke that feeling, like you said, of unconditional self-love. It's hard because actually as I'm sitting here thinking, I'm like, I can't think of anyone off the top of my head, but it's probably because we're chatting on a podcast, maybe.
It might have been an animal. I don't know if you had a dog or something when you were young.
I'm a crazy cat lady, Lou.
Okay. So you've had a cat.
Yeah.
What's it like? Loves you regardless.
Oh, they're amazing. Yeah, that's actually a really good one. When I got, I was away for work for like 3 months, and I got home, and my husband had been away as well. So my mother-in-law had been looking after the house, and I always tell the story of when I walked in the house and my cats were all over me like a bad rash. Like, I couldn't make it past the floor mat at the door. I was on the ground with them both, like, cuddling me. It was so beautiful. I cried. I literally cried because I was like, oh, they love me.
See that? When you were talking, your whole expression, your whole body language changed.
Yeah.
That is the feeling that you need for you.
Yeah.
That is, you need to see them like they see you. Mm. This is my best person. Look at her. She is perfect. She's absolutely perfect. And that we have these eyes of all these conditions we've been told. So when we look in the mirror and we go, oh, and then you go, oh, I'm supposed to have a business, I'm supposed to be successful, and we've got all these conditions on ourselves. Your cat just went, thank God she's back. We've missed you. Threw themselves on you. And so that's, you know, that it's almost like, yeah, that's the feeling that you've got to practice every day. That's how you unravel your self-esteem and help you to get better if it's you that's dealing with it. And it works, believe me. It's not perfect. And every day I go, oh, why did I do that? But at least I'm questioning.
Yeah.
The anxiety went away. The panic went away. Sorry, Karen.
Oh, no, I just think that's so amazing, though, that I do feel that often the small things, the simplest things, are the most impactful. But it's also why it can be quite hard for people to implement them, because they're like, oh, it's so little, how can it possibly? And so they don't, and the answer is just try it, just start doing the thing, start practicing, like you say, holding something from someone that loves you, or just practice the small things and you'll notice the big shifts probably. And you definitely won't if you don't try it. But also, as you said, like that awareness, you're never going to get perfection, right? But awareness is such a great pattern interrupt, if nothing else, right?
Yeah. And it is a pattern interrupt because we're all full of patterns. And we, you know, you practice all day long all these patterns that, and you think, well, where's my life today because of all the patterns I had yesterday and today in my brain. If you change those patterns, if you start actually showing yourself unconditional love, it will change. And that's kind of like, you know, your self-esteem has been blown out by conditions. The only way it can get better is by unconditional love. And that's why I work with parents, because parents have total unconditional love for their child. You know, even though they might have put all these things, we have to get back to that. And what I'm teaching the parents, we need to get back to unconditional love for that child, no matter what they look like, what they say, who they are, who they're dating, all these things. We need to take all those away because that is conditional love. And that's teaching the child that they're not good enough. We need to teach the child that they are good enough. And the child will work it out themselves. They're smart. So I always say, you know, if we change, they change. That's the biggest key. You know, people go to me, oh, can I change my child? No, I cannot. And I wouldn't anyway, because it's not my area of expertise. I'm not going to start coaching children. I mean, I've done that. And I realize now that the only way I could make change was by helping the parent change. Because once the parent changes, the child changes.
Is it challenging for parents to shift that behavior, remove the condition from love? Because to me, that seems like a pretty ingrained part of societal conditioning. Like it's a deeply rooted part of our society, right? That expectation to achieve and conditions attached to almost everything. Do you find it's a tricky process for parents to go through?
No, I find that working with most parents, I think the clarity of what's going on, that's my first session when I worked with them, was about what is really going on. Where has their self-esteem gone? What happened to them? And when they get all that, they go, oh my gosh. You know, and it's through their love. You know, it's through their love that they go, I was doing all these things because I loved them. I was doing these things because I wanted them to be successful. I wanted them to achieve. And I said, yeah, but do you see that's all conditions for them? And also I teach with the parents, there's two massive big, I call them software viruses in a parent, and it's done utterly through love. And that's why I always say the very best of parents have children that have low self-esteem, not the crappy parents, the brilliant parents, the great parents have kids with low self-esteem. It's because they do two things. One, they say to themselves, I never want my child to suffer. And the second thing they say is, I want my child to have everything I never had.
Yeah.
So these are the biggest things that I call them Trojan horse viruses, because what I say to the parent is, here's the deal, right? Both of those are about you. They're not about your child, right? You never want a child to suffer. You don't think suffering is what we all need to suffer. We all need to learn stickability. And your child's not going to have any resilience if they just give up after an hour or a minute, if you're always rescuing them and picking them up. And then, you know, and then the other thing is, you know, I want my child to have everything I never had. But they never had your childhood. All they think is they've got a card to get out of jail free for everything in life. And you know what? Life isn't like that. You know, as they go through life, they're going to go have a lot of hardships, because people are going to go, you know, suck it up, princess. You know, we're all doing this, and you need to learn the hard way. So in a way, it teaches the children not to be resilient. And so I say to the parent, you know, you didn't mean to do this. It's just that somewhere in your childhood, you went, when I'm a parent, I'll never let my child do that. And I will always make sure my child has everything. I won't let them suffer. And out of that love for them, you've kind of gone swung the other way. And that's why a lot of parents end up with Pharaoh children, because they're serving the Pharaoh. They're serving the Pharaoh. And they're going, okay, I'm going to make sure that you've got everything. I'm going to do this. And the thing is that the child actually hates it. And so this anger and everything towards the parent that I see a lot is, for God's sake, leave me alone. You know, stop on at me. And, you know, and they're literally trying to say to the parent, stop serving me. But there's so many miscommunications firing. They're not really sure what's going on, but this is a scenario I see. But it's mainly because the parent has put themselves in a servant situation. And that's because of these two rules. I never want them to suffer, and I want them to have everything I never had. So you're putting on your all your childhood stuff onto them. And they're like, woohoo, haven't got to do anything, turn up, don't have to try, don't have to save for anything. Mom's going to buy me a car, a house, train set, everything I need. I don't have to even think about it. But what happens? The kid ends up with anxiety and depression because they're like, what is the point of me showing up? I don't have to do anything. And they go, what's wrong with my child? And I'm like, they've got low self-esteem. I've given them everything. When they say that, I say, well, there's the problem. When you give somebody everything, why should they even try? You haven't even given them a chance to show you what they can do. The minute you stop doing that, they'll go, oh, you know what? It's not nice the first time. But then they go, oh, okay, I'm going to show you. I'm going to save and buy my car, and I'm going to save and buy a house, and I'm going to go back to college or whatever they're going to do, because it's like, now you're letting me show you what I can do.
So good. I mean, I feel like this is a bit of a revelation on many levels. And I almost wonder if there is anyone in the world that couldn't benefit from reading this book that you've written, because it feels very much like it's going to be helpful for parents. It's going to be helpful for adults who don't have kids, even just for that sheer level of awareness, right? That awareness of the behaviors. And like you said, when you are acting out the servant or the Pharaoh, having that level of awareness so you can go, oh, what triggered me? And then, you know, do what you need to do to work through that. But then also parents being able to understand these behaviors from kids, like I can see that the relationships are going to be so much stronger on the other side of this, right? Is that one of the, I mean, you must see it all the time when you work with parents coming out the other side of it. Probably it's like the relationship is so much stronger, hey?
I think one of the things that parents feel is scared of is that they're going to have to cut a child off, especially when they've got really bad behavior. And it's awful to have to cut somebody out of your life. I mean, don't get me wrong, if you've got a toxic somebody in your life, you need to get rid of them, that's fine. But when it's your child or a loved one or a relative or a mother, I've had people beg me, you know, I'm going to have to divorce, or I'm going to have to cut my mother out of my life. And what the great thing is, I'm able, after the first session, they go, wow, I don't have to do that anymore, because now I know what's going on for them. I can take a step back and realize that I'm an observer. And you know, and one of the biggest things I get back is, we've stopped fighting. The house is peaceful again, because now I know what's going on for them. It's a bit like, you know, when somebody's got, I don't know, something, and you go, oh, you know, now I know what's happening for them. It's like a diagnosis almost. Sometimes people go from a diagnosis, oh, that's a relief, because now I know what's wrong with them. Mm. I think the biggest thing shift for me, and that's what I love, is after that first session, they go, oh man, and I've got some tools to deal with it. Now I know I can have a rehearsal. I call it a dress rehearsal. You know, when they triggered, I know what to do. I'm not going to fight with them or scream. And I think, I know what to do now. I know how to cope with this behavior. And that's the biggest shift I see. And when you do that, the person that's then triggered doesn't know what to do. They're like, oh, okay, well, this is different. No one's having a go at me. No one's fighting me. And it's so interesting to see the dynamics. They look at you like, okay, well, this isn't normally happening.
You know? That's a good pattern interrupt. I'm just remembering when I was a kid and my mum like firing up at me and me spitting back, and then it was just this spit session of us being angry at each other and yelling at each other. And it would always be the same until my dad would step in and be like, all right, enough is enough, right? Yeah. I'm just imagining the difference if mum had have just like gone, oh, or if I had have, you know, done that and been like, oh, okay, this is just, you know, that level of awareness would be absolutely life-giving to so many families.
And that's why I really want to get this message out. I mean, this first book, Restore Balance, is for parents. This one's for children. But I've got three more in my head. You know, I've got one for partnerships, you know, for relationships. I've got one for work even, you know, when you've got a pharaoh at work and you don't know what to do about it. There's so many rules for pharaohs, you know, there's so many, I mean, I can't even go into it, but there's so many rules of how to deal with a pharaoh and how you can actually have them in your life if you want them, and how to have a relationship with them. And so, yeah, I've got a few things that I've got up my sleeve, and I just want to get out there and start speaking my truth about the things that I have not only, I wouldn't say conquered, I think I've got some insights into with what's happening for me. I've also seen a lot of change with the people I've worked with, and I've been so excited because the feedback has been so great. Wow, you know, we don't fight anymore. Mm. And that just takes the level, I call it under siege, you know, when your house is under siege by a pharaoh, you know, the minute that your house is not under siege, everybody's benefiting.
Yeah.
Husband's not stressed. He's not being called back to home because things have kicked off. The other siblings aren't hiding in their rooms because the pharaoh's kicked off. And, you know, and the mum's doing her best to deal with whatever she's trying so hard to understand why this child is behaving like this. And you've got all this, don't speak to me like this and don't do this to me. It's not about you. It's not about you. You need to step back. This is their stuff. They're dealing with it. But the way to actually help them through this is for the parent to change. And I've done this a lot of time with kids. You know, parents have asked me, go and coach my child, you know, and I look at them, I go, you know, if I coach your child, you know what they'll say to me? No. What they'll say is, my parent needs to change. I said, I can actually just write it down for you and I'll get the child to say yes or no. And they just laugh. And I said, because what the child's going to say is, there's nothing wrong with me. It's my parent. They're mad. They're nuts. Yeah. I said, so I can tell every child I've coached, that's what they've said. Don't coach me, coach them. They're nuts, right? And they're right. They're actually right. But you know what? The parent got there out of love.
Mm.
Out of love. Not out of hate, out of love. They're trying their best to get their child the best life they can. And in that, this has happened, this pharaoh and servant relationship. And that's when I can come in and go, okay, after 2 hours, I can guarantee your stress in the house can go from a 10 to a zero. I can guarantee once you've had that insight of what's going on for your child. And the parent and the child's like, thank God. Thank God. They're not shouting at me anymore.
So cool, Lou. I am just a little bit mind blown, to be honest, because I didn't really, you know, I recognize all these behaviors, all the way that you're explaining it makes so much sense. I can see how it has a flow on effect from childhood to adulthood to every single relationship. I never, ever, ever made the association that low self-esteem was at the root of all of those behaviors. And I guess it makes sense because I've always been a firm believer in self-love being kind of the pathway to a lot more ease, a lot more confidence. So I guess that does make sense. But that little piece of the puzzle that it all starts with low self-esteem is the point where we kind of need to recognize it. That's the key. It's amazing. I love it.
No, it is the key. You're right. And that's why I'm so excited to get out and share this. You know, I've been struggling myself, like everybody would, like, you know, why would people listen to me? I think the biggest thing, I was like, you know, I'm not from science. I don't have a degree. I went to study psychology and I hated it. And I studied counseling and I hated it. And I was like, what's wrong with me? You know, why can't I should be able to learn all this so I can help people. But then what was the biggest great insight for me? Was I realized that coming from the arts was actually a gift. It was a gift that I didn't realize I had. Because, you know, I like science, don't get me wrong. But when people are giving me stats and all kinds of things, I don't get it. But I talk in stories. So when I'm coaching people, I give lots of stories. And I think when I'm talking about the stage and who's on stage and who isn't and the characters that I bring in, people go, I really understand this. It's because you've come at me with this creative kind of show that I've got it. And I said, thank God. Because I said, if my schooling would have been like this, I would have got it. I would have got it. But because it wasn't set up for the way that I thought, I didn't really understand it. And one of the biggest things, I want people to understand self-esteem and really get it. Because once you get it and you think about the characters and the stories and, you know, it's really quite simple. It's so simple, but it's taken me 15 years to work it out. 15 years to get all this information through my sieve of my creative brain and then come out as very simple. This is what it is. And this is the way that I see it. You know, so I don't say that I'm from science because I'm not. I'm from the arts. And it's always going to be art. It's always going to be a creative session when you're working with me, and a fun session. We laugh so much because once we make, you know, because I talk about the pharaoh behavior, but then we start making the character that they're dealing with, that is honestly, we cry with laughter. We cry with laughter. I remember one woman, she had like a knitting needle in the person's hand because all she wanted to do was burst everybody's button bubbles. Just, you know, and then she, rather than get annoyed when this person was triggered, she said, I just kept laughing because I kept realizing that she got a knitting needle out and she started bursting everybody's bubbles. And we were laughing so much about that. And I said, see, how are you going to react now? She said, I'm just going to be great. Mm. Like, you know what? You do you. You do you. You get your knitting needle out and start bursting my bubble. But it doesn't matter because I know who you are and I know what this is.
Mm. Oh, amazing. Lou, thank you so much. I feel like my life has been deeply already affected in a positive way. I think this awareness is going to shift how I show up in the world. It's going to shift how I respond to other people's behavior. And I'm really grateful for that. And I know that everyone listening is going to have had a lot of aha moments. I was just nodding the whole time you were talking. my head feels like a bobblehead. It made so much sense. So congratulations on finishing the book. And you're just about to go on tour as well. So congrats on that. And just massive thanks for coming and sharing your story with us today.
Well, thank you. This is my first time I've done a podcast. This is my first one, so it's exciting. And thank you for being such a great host and for asking the right questions and helping me to relax, because obviously this is my first one. I'm so excited, though, to come on. I love self-esteem. It's kind of my favourite subject. And, yeah, the book's coming out soon, Restore Balance. That's for parents. And people want to get hold of me, I'm sure you'll put a link somewhere.
Yes, I will have all the links to be able to get Lou's book and access her website and social media as well. You got some socials, Louise?
Yeah, just getting on to that. So, yeah, they can actually just register to know, to keep in contact with me, where I'm going to be on tour. If they want to catch me speak, I'm speaking on Wednesday, which is exciting. And I've only got 2 tickets left. So I'm only doing small little gatherings to begin with. And yeah, so that if they can come and hear me speak or, yeah, keep in contact with me, and that'd be lovely.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Louise.
Thank you.
I told you you'd have some aha moments. Did you even know that self-esteem, low self-esteem, could have such a huge impact on your life? I mean, it seems sensible, but I don't think many of us have really looked at low self-esteem in the way that Louise explains it. And I honestly think it's life-changing. If you'd like to find out more about Louise's work, you can head to getrestorebalance.com. That is linked in the show notes. There you'll be able to grab her book. You'll be able to check out her tour dates. She's currently touring the southwest of Australia with her show Triggered, which is a 25-minute journey into low self-esteem behaviors through the characters that we talked about in this episode, the Pharaoh and the Servant. You can find all that information and all Louise's offerings at getrestorebalance.com. That's it from me today, team. Thanks so much for joining me. Don't forget, if you want to find out more information about Align and Thrive, my 5-month human design deep dive for anyone who's in the first 3 years of their business, click the link in the show notes. Don't miss out. There's only 2 spots available, and I can't wait. I can't wait to discover who the 2 people, my 2 new clients, are going to be that get to experience the freedom and the joy of building their business their way. All right, team, until next week, take care, keep milking the shit out of life, and I'll catch you in the next episode.